Welcome to the Magic Musicals and Theatre Podcast. In this week's episode, we are talking to the stars of Everybody's Talking About Jamie. They are Josie Walker and John McCrae. Welcome to the Magic Musicals and Theatre Podcast. I'm here in the bar with John McCrae and Josie Walker from Everybody's Talking About Jamie.
Yay.
And I've brought you, as I always bring everybody I interview, usually it used to be cupcakes, but I haven't bought you cupcakes. I've bought you something different. I've never had these before.
Cannoli.
Oh, Josie knows immediately what they are. Mm. Perhaps, do you want to
Italian
share that with us?
Cannoli. I only know them from Desperate Housewives of New Jersey, or Real Housewives of New Jersey. They eat a lot of cannoli.
I saw them on Bake Off.
Yeah. Look at this.
But I didn't know they were called cannolis.
Cannoli. Well, yeah. I just got them from Pompeii up the road.
They look
beautiful. Anyway.
I'm glad I've only eaten half of my cake.
Yeah, exactly. See, I saw that Josie had already bought cake with her, but you take one of these and pop it on your...
I love pistachios.
There's two pistachio ones. That's chocolate. And that's
take the pistachio
hazelnut,
one,
I think is
so
the other
much
one. Anyway, there you go. This will fill you up before your evening performance.
Thank you very much.
I do. That's my pleasure. We hope we all enjoy them. Anyway, as I said, you are both starring in Everybody's Talking About Jamie. John, described in The Guardian as silvery voiced and scissor legged.
Wow.
Did you read that?
I didn't. No, I haven't.
Not read the review.
Don't
you can
read the
tell you what, you can read this
I
one.
Have.
5-star review.
No, I haven't read any, but that is very that's very sweet and very specific.
I thought that. Scissor legged.
Scissor legged's good.
It is good, isn't it?
Scissor legged's good, yeah. It's a good description of those power legs.
Power pins.
Yeah.
And really long legs as well, I noticed when
envious.
I saw the production.
We're all
incredible
envious.
Legs. Much. Mm. Yes. They're beautiful.
You didn't get them from me.
beautiful legs. Now, we talked on our Magic Musicals and Theatre Podcast. We talked to Dan Gillespie-Sells and Tom McCrae about the show before it opened, actually.
I remember listening.
So, I don't know that we had any idea. I mean, obviously hopeful of the success that it would be, but did you think, oh my word, we're on to an absolute winner here? Or
Well, we've been workshopping it since 2014, so I think that we had a magical time together, all of us, and we knew that it would happen at some point at Sheffield, but we didn't realise that so quickly we'd be in town and everything else that seems to be happening with it. Everybody's talking about Jamie and sharing the love, and it seems to be galvanising and picking up speed, and it's just the most amazing ride so far.
It is. It's like a train, isn't
it?
It's like
it's unstoppable.
Train that started and now it's zoomed down to London, and it's just incredible. The show, for those who haven't seen it, basically centres around the story of Jamie, played by John, who, I mean, in a nutshell, wants to go to his school prom in a dress. But it's about an awful lot more. It explores quite a lot of complicated ideas, I think, about sexual politics, about celebration of difference. I think, you know, Joe Cox would be proud. We have more in common than that which divides us, I suppose, is sort of one of the messages that comes out of it. But talking about the sexual politics side, I met Dan again the other day, and we were talking about how specific the show is in the difference between drag and transvestitism and how important he feels that is, to be specific and not generalised.
Yeah, really specific. And I guess our story is slight. I don't know if I necessarily would describe them as sexual politics, perhaps more just about gender and identity. Because what's really interesting for me from my standpoint is that I'm playing an openly gay character, but we never discuss, that's never a topic of conversation, his sexuality. It's all about his identity and who he is as a person, that aside. But yeah, as RuPaul says, he often talks about how, you know, transgender people take identity very seriously. They identify as transgender people or as, you know, females. And drag, what it sort of does is sort of mocks identity in a different way. It's sort of, they're shapeshifters. They can do lots of different things. And I think that's from people who don't have the biggest knowledge of it, often clump everything in one group, but it's there's so many different categories and so many sort of subcultures within everything. And that's we're just diving into one thing, which is drag, and nothing more, nothing less. He doesn't want to become a woman. He doesn't, he even says it in the play. His best friend asks him, do you want to be a woman? He says, no, I want to be a boy who sometimes wants to be a girl. Just sometimes, that's all. And it's about expressing himself through clothing and makeup. It's nothing to do with sort of an inner yearning to be a female.
It's interesting because there's been so much in the news recently about that, about transgender, about gender fluidity and all of that. And whilst this show, as you say, actually isn't about that. Also, I think what struck me was there is there's no shame from Jamie. And I think that's a really important message to get through. Because so many so-called gay plays are about shame, about an element of
falling in love. He does none of those things,
and there isn't any of that in it. It's about
him being. I mean, there is an element of shame in the drag aspect of it, but it's never anything to do with his sexuality. He was openly out at school about the age of like 13, 14. And all of his friends are fully aware of that. All his family are.
And of course, we should add this is based on a true story.
It is. I mean, I don't know how much of that stuff is. We kind of, Josie and I, you can probably talk more about this, but we did a lot of work on the characters before we'd met Jamie and Margaret.
Yeah, I mean, the writers had met Jamie and Margaret, and they discussed the script with presented them with the script, and they read it. But as far as John and I were concerned, the first workshop, we hadn't watched the documentary and we hadn't met Jamie and Margaret. And then we met Jamie and Margaret on the first night of the first performance of Jamie in Sheffield.
When it was a full production.
Yeah.
And that's
so
the first time you met them.
Yeah, but, and again, I think when we've met them, it's not to discuss their character. Especially for me, I think Margaret she likes to stand in the wings. You know, she pushes Jamie forward and she's all about Jamie, supporting Jamie and loving him from afar in a way you don't get to see what she feels. You just see glimmers of what she's feeling in the documentary, but it's not explored and it's not something that she wants to share. So we're very respectful of that. And we've just sort of taken poetic license with her storyline, really, and give her a few more flaws, because she says two things. I never lied to Jamie, and my character does. She hides the truth about his father from him. And the other one is... I've forgotten. it'll come back to me.
So yes, because I mean, I suppose we say it is a play inspired by that story.
Yeah.
Most recently we had the girls in West End based on the Calendar Girls, and the real Calendar Girls were there, you know, and that was a big issue. But in this play, it doesn't seem quite so much. Yeah. You're not actually portraying them; you're portraying characters inspired by them.
We've sort of moved location, and we've set it now as well. So obviously, he went to school prom in a dress in 2013 2012, whereas we've set our play in 2017 when we did it in Sheffield, but I wonder if it was 18 now. But it's, you know, it's up to date, and we're in Sheffield, he's from County Durham, so there are differences, but there are also similarities. One, we learnt there were similarities in what we'd done after we met them. There were, you know, parallels, but that was never the intention from the actor's point of view. It was sort of what we just made of the script.
I think when I watched the documentary, I thought I wanted to play more of that Margaret, because she is so inspirational. And the other point was that she never said Jamie was a mistake. She would never say that. And when I sing the song "He's My Boy," I say "my perfect mistake." And there is a simplicity to the way she loves, but it is the way to love. You know, and I think that's what touches so many people when they come and see the show, because when you love someone and you accept them 100% for who they are and you support them, then they blossom, they bloom, and they can go out into the world. They have that grounding underneath them. They have that love underneath them. That's their foundation. So whatever happens after that, that's what is inside them. that their mother or whoever accepted them, loved them, didn't ever say to them that anything was wrong, didn't bat an eyelid at anything he comes out with or dresses or his sexuality. Nothing fazed her. She was just there to pave the way for him.
Well, certainly when I saw the show not all that long ago, that the audience was packed, I mean, with quite a lot of young people who were really there to get behind a cause. Yeah. It was more than just coming to see a show in the West End and seeing what they felt about it. Mm-hmm. They knew what it was about. Uh-huh. They were ready for it before they came. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I wonder if you've seen that in the audience kind of change as the plays got better known and everyone knows what it's about, if you found your audiences kind of changing to this kind of supportive,
certainly feels a bit cheering. Like a movement for sure. Mm-hmm. And I think that it's a testament to, I think, a lot of the audience members sat there going, that's me on stage. And I think I don't know if young people have been represented so honestly in such a long time in theatre. And I think the diversity of our cast speaks to that, you know, the universal aspect of sort of working out who you are at such a tumultuous age. I think young people sit there and go, I understand that, and I know, and I don't know where else at the moment they could go and find that on stage. And I think we're all so happy to be carrying the torch for them. Not just the kids, the adults too.
Yeah, I think because it is so positive as well, the show, it moves really, really quickly. It speaks through a pop vernacular. Dan Gillespie Sells' songs are incredible. And they're not just sort of catchy pop tunes. They are, you know, there's an awful lot of layers to his music and his references. So I think that it just speaks to them. It speaks to an awful lot of people. Kids are enjoying listening. We're listening
to
the radio.
We're listening to the radio making very loud noises.
I think kids, what surprises me most at stage door when I see kids is the way they talk about their moms, because it seems to have an instant effect on them. And they see their mother, what their mother's been through, and how their actions affect her. And it seems to have an instant effect on the way they respond to her. They either want to bring her or they want to go home and be different to her.
Isn't that interesting?
Bring her to the show.
Or the parents want to bring their kids to the show, and they say, "I've got a mothers turn up and say, I've got a gay son. I need to bring him to see the show." And
yes, it must work from both ways, mustn't it? That mothers seeing perhaps how they could be different,
but also
kids seeing how they could be different, which I don't think many people would think of as a message.
Yeah,
because you'd think the mother would get it, but maybe not the kids. But
well, yeah, we see Jamie, we have a scene before the song He's My Boy, and Jamie is very upset with his mother because he finds out that she has been keeping secrets from him about his father. She's basically been sending him birthday cards and saying, your dad's going to be here at a certain time, but she's covering for him because he's not interested in Jamie, he wants to pull out of his life. And she's trying to protect him and, you know, wisely or unwisely, makes the decision to keep that storyline going, but then he finds out himself because he goes and finds his father and finds that his mother's been lying to him. And so it's a very upsetting scene because the audience have built up a relationship with Margaret and Jamie, and they're wonderful together. You know, the chemistry anyway is natural between us, but it's beautifully written between the pair of them. And to see them break apart is very, very upsetting to watch. And so kids see that. They see, that's my behaviour. They see Jamie leaving the house in a storm. And then they see the aftermath of what a mother feels and what she feels about her child. And it really, I just never thought that it would touch them as much as it does. But it does. It touches the kids as much as the adults and the older generation as well.
Well, it was great to be in an audience that felt, as John said, like a movement was happening, but a joyous movement, and that was lovely about it. It's not a feeling of anger; it's a pure joy, whooping and cheering. So, John, you're only 25.
Yes.
Now, Jamie in the show is 16. But Leo said you say you're 25, and it's hard to believe because you look much younger. I suspect you're going to be one of those people that can play Peter Pan when you're 45.
We've got one of those in the cast, haven't we?
I think it's you.
Yeah, it's not me.
Actually, both of you could play. Yeah. Anyway, you both look much younger than your years. But John, you knew from the very beginning you wanted to be an actor. You went to Sylvia Young.
I did.
You went to stage school.
Yes, it was fantastic. It was honestly one of the best decisions I ever made. Well, obviously, I was very young. But
how old were you when you went to
Sylvia Young? I went when I was 12. I decided I wanted to be an actor when I was 8, and I pursued it at Sylvia's when I was 12. And it's just honestly the most wonderful institution, and it teaches you so much about professionalism and doing the work and sort of, you know, it's a strange thing for a child to be treated like an adult in professional environments, but it teaches you an awful lot. And I attribute a lot of what I hopefully do well within this company to Sylvia Young. And the sort of, you know, it's really hard work and you have to take it really seriously, because it's sort of that fame speech where they go, no, this is where you start paying in sweat, because it's not just a frolic in the park. It's really, if you decide you want to do this, then it's going to be really hard, and they let you know. And I'm so grateful for that.
Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, there's discipline and all of those things you have to learn, and also, obviously, to sing and dance and act.
Yes, all that fun stuff as well. To do that as a kid and not have to do maths on a Wednesday, on a Thursday and Friday, because you can do drama class. It's amazing.
Now, Josie, you sing in this amazingly. I gather you took extra singing lessons.
I did.
Did this. Well, you'd been in Matilda, so you'd already done.
Yeah, I mean, musicals. I didn't go down the drama school route, but I have.
Did you not at all?
No, but I did go. When I've needed it, I've sought people out that I admire. Mm-hmm.
How did you get into acting without doing the drama school? Always interested.
I came to London. I'd met some people along the way who were already working in London, and I think when I got to about 16, 17, I decided that I wanted to sing in some way, form or other. Nobody in my family, they're all comedians in my family.
Oh, are they?
Yeah.
Oh, professional comedians?
Yeah.
Are they?
Yeah. So there were no musical theatre performers, but I was a big listener of Elaine Page and the like, and kind of had aspirations for that, but didn't know how to get there. And I sang a lot. And then I did a drama foundation course in Lytham St Anne's, where we were living at the time. And that was your A-levels, and then you did a bit of drama on the side. But there were no qualifications or anything, and it was very much starting out then. And then everybody started going to drama school, and just couldn't afford it, you know. Just couldn't afford it. And my family kind of didn't want me to go to London so early as well, at the 17, 18. So I went and worked on the cruise ships for a while.
Did you? What did you do on the cruise ships? I love a cruise ship.
I was like a production singer. Yeah.
Were you?
I was actually talking about this morning, yeah.
Which cruise line?
It's at the bottom of the sea now, unfortunately. It was called the Oceanos. And it was a Greek cruise liner.
Mm, right.
Yeah, it's the one, if anyone remembers in the news, where the captain got off first and left everyone to it. Mm. Yeah,
I think we all know about that one.
I said abandoned ship, and that means abandoned ship. And it was like, but not you, though. You're supposed
but
to
But you
stay.
Weren't on the ship when that happened.
No, it just happened the year afterwards.
Right.
Yeah. So it wasn't anything to do with any of my performances. It's, yeah. And then I came home, and the people that I'd met on the ship said, you'd have to, if you want to sing and go to London, you'll have to go to London. Mm-hmm. And so I just started going for cattle calls, as they call them, and got my first job, which was Matador with Stephanie Powers and John Barrowman. I was number 924 in the line up for the, and started queuing up at 8 o'clock in the morning. And
did you get your equity card on the cruise ship?
I got my
equity card
yeah,
from
the
remember.
Cruise ship, and working very hard for it. Yeah. I got my provisional equity, and then I had my full equity and still got my equity.
Been there, done it.
Yeah. And then I was very lucky because that was, you know, a nice little run, and we went into, I went into Sound of Music after that, and then Phantom of the Opera, and it just kept going.
So then you were show hopping, as they call it.
And so I had a singing teacher for Phantom of the Opera, a lady called Jenny O'Grady, who was amazing. But she's more of a, she's moved into the side of organising orchestras and singers for films now, so she doesn't teach anymore. And so when I was looking for a teacher, I thought, who's the best and who's my favourite? And that is Claire Moore, who I spent most of my 20s trying to be. And I think that she had an influence on my voice more than anybody else, because I just listened to her, because I couldn't afford the singing lessons as well so much. I would emulate her sound. She has an amazing belt sound and then a soprano, and there's no difference between the two.
No break.
Yeah, there's no break. So I used to practice to Miss Saigon every day to her. And so very starstruck the first few meetings with her, and still jump and smile when her name, Claire Moore, full name, comes up on my phone. Mm-hmm. She's incredible. So that she really unlocked some sticky patches for me within this, because I hadn't done a musical where I'm using my own voice for a while.
Yes, I heard you said that you'd sung more as a character before, and
yeah,
now
Matilda
this is kind of
was like that.
Yeah, right. Yes, which is different. It is.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, it's a lot
now
of screaming,
you're singing as you. And so going forwards, I mean, Jamie, presumably this show's going to go on for, we don't know.
Who knows?
How long?
Hopefully.
But and I can't imagine. John, I can't imagine anybody else doing that part. I don't really know how that would ever work, because you kind of just are it. I mean, and you're so central to the piece.
I think there are so many people out there that can do it, though, and that hopefully they get the chance. Every year, we've got people being pumped out of musical theatre colleges around London who will be perfect.
Well, I know there is incredible talent around now. Young talent, far more talented than people were when, well, or far better taught perhaps than
and my dream is to see somebody else take on the role. I would, you know, because then your work sort of is immortalized beyond you, you know, because it's very, I can't watch myself do it. And I would love to see the show as a whole production.
And so what do you, well, both of you really see looking forwards? I mean, how long do you think you'll stay with this, and
well, I'm contracted,
what sort
until
of work are you interested in doing after?
I'm contracted until October.
It's quite a long time away.
But I would actually like to, I would really like to do a play, because you explore so much of a character's emotions in a musical through song. So, you know, there's sort of a lot of stuff that does go unspoken, and I would be really interested in sort of discovering that through a text point, through a text standpoint more than singing. It's also really hard doing 8 shows a week vocally. There's a lot of hard work involved in maintenance. What about you, Josie?
I've never really had the luxury of choosing what I'm going to do next. I would like to have a break, because I live by the seaside now. And
oh, do you?
Yeah, I'd like to do some seaside things, learn to paddleboard. So have some time off and see what
I tried
happens.
It once. It could end up like the cruise ship. That's all I'm saying.
it is hard, isn't it? But I really want to learn how to do it.
You want to start on very, very smooth water.
Yeah, that's my, yeah, exactly. Yeah.
To start,
my dad
at least
had a terrible accident with that. Oh. He's 77, so that's not advisable. I will be learning to paddleboard next.
Okay, well, that's not the normal answer that we get from people when I ask where they feel they're going. Paddleboarding has not been in our list.
We'll see, we'll see.
Well, I was going to ask how you both of you sort of relax when you're not doing, I know 8 shows a week, mostly how people relax is they go to sleep. But clearly, Josie, you love the seaside life and the outside life and the
I'm a keen
walking
horse rider.
Are you?
Yeah.
Have you got a horse?
No, not yet. Mm-hmm. Not yet. But I've only been riding properly for 2 years. Seriously.
Oh, and it's a new thing.
I've ridden sort of all my life, but I haven't really got to the standard where I can manage. by myself and jump and...
And we're talking eventing, dressage,
I don't think,
show
no,
jumping,
I don't like competition. I just okay. want to, you know, I think it's like yoga, because I love yoga as well. It's a lifetime pursuit, and you just get, you know, you go with your own standards, like acting, you know. I enjoy being in competition with myself in anything. I don't believe in competition beyond that.
Right. But you could do a bit of a team chase course or something somewhere.
It's fun to do with it, go out for a ride with people, but, you know, I don't really enjoy the pressure of competition.
No, I'm completely with you there. Yeah. I like to do that riding thing, and when they all go over the jump, I go around the side. John, what are your hobbies?
I like to cook.
It's very good.
And I recently got a puppy. So that keeps me pretty busy.
And what sort of puppy? Yeah.
He is a Labradoodle Cockapoo mix, and his name is Winston, and he's apricot colour.
Oh.
And he's downstairs in my dressing room as we speak.
How
so if you'd like to meet him on the way out, you're more than welcome. He loves visitors.
I would very definitely.
Well, he just comes to work with me.
He's a baby voice now.
Yes, ever.
Winston.
Oh, no.
Sorry, how old did you say Winston was?
He was born in January, so he's about 2 months old. And think this is the perfect time to just talk about this being the ultimate dream job. Like, this is the job of my dreams, and I have a puppy in my dressing room. And I don't want any
better,
of the listeners to be jealous, but, I mean, it can't get any better than this. So, to answer your question, what I want to do next, I'm not sure it can get any better than this.
I might just give up after this.
I think I'll be you. I'd like to be John McCree.
Well, whatever happens, the best of luck.
It's been lovely talking to you.
It really has. Thank you so much. I'm Alice Arnold, and that was the Musicals and Theatre podcast. If you enjoyed that, then you can hear me every Saturday and Sunday morning from 6 till 10 on Mellow Magic, where I've lots of lovely, timeless, relaxing classics, musical numbers, and interviews.